Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, children at heart and of all ages. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut for this October 30th, 2022. Your host and program director here, James, with my partner in art, Seth. Seth, let's roll cameras.
All right, cameras. Wait, yeah. Wait, are we on camera?
Oh, no, no. let's roll microphones.
There we go.
That seems to make more sense. Yes, yes. Seth, thank you so much for doing this with me. This is a passion project of mine and something that I believe in this community. Director's Cut is going to be our feature show for our artists of our community, whether they're musicians, singers, photographers. I want mimes, magicians. I don't care. And really, what it'll be fun to do, too, with the show as it evolves, Seth, is give it a platform for other things. You know, we've talked before about Miss Wisconsin Rapids pageant contestants and things like that that we'll be able to bring into the show. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I agree. I agree completely. This is something that we don't have here. We've done a little bit on these airwaves. We've done it a little bit on FRM Fridays. Mm-hmm. We've done it a little bit on Morning Magazine, getting theater groups in to talk about their stuff. But this is, we're going to be able to do a little more in depth.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be able to get a little bit more into what they're feeling, thinking, how they're being creative. You know, that's one of those things that we have not been able to do. And I think this show will be a great way to showcase that.
This will be a weekly show premiering after Seth Faces the Music. Be sure to tell your friends about that show.
Yeah.
It's a great lead-in.
It is.
it's a perfect lead-in, really.
If I do say so myself, right.
But one of the other things, there will be weeks where we don't have guests. During those weeks, Seth and I are going to be able to dive into a lot of the headlines that are coming out of the entertainment industry, the world. And really being able to dive in the topics that we don't get a chance to in normal circumstances. Things like, actors of different races playing different characters and sexes and that. Some of the logistics and some of the details behind the scenes of some of the decisions that are made.
Yeah.
And Marvel versus DC, Seth. I mean, we got to get into that, right?
I know exactly what side I fall down on.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that might be a short discussion.
It could be. It could be.
Very short, but that's all right.
We got a lot for you to look forward to, everybody, and we want you to be a part of this show as well. We want your feedback.
Yes.
James or Seth at WFHR.com. You can always hit us up and message us about your feedback on the show as it goes along.
That's right. That's right. Keep us in line, I guess, is one way to say it.
It's a good way to put it.
This show could easily be like 4 hours each week.
Yeah.
We could get into things. So let's keep us reined in a little bit. That's what we're looking for.
It's a very, very good idea. And this is one of the fun things about this show, Seth, is getting to bring in amazing, wonderful, creative people like we're about to do right now. Our friends at CWAC have the SpongeBob musical that we're going to talk about right now. I want to go ahead and introduce some of the cast that we have with us today. We'll do this as we ask questions. We'll kind of start from left to right, kind of go that way. So go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Theo. I'm a student at UW Stevens Point right now studying communication, and I'm playing SpongeBob SquarePants.
Thanks for being here, Theo. Good to meet you.
Thank you.
I'm Nick Neuber. I am a programmer at Skyward, and I am playing Patrick Starr.
Nick, good to see you.
Thanks, everyone.
I am Amber Fate, and I am a product owner at Skyward, and I am playing Sandy Cheeks, y'all.
Amber, always good to see you.
Thanks
for being
here.
And I want to start with you, Amber, because I want to appreciate, just thank you for reaching out.
Yeah.
This interview is something that we've been looking forward to, not only because we are excited about the show and excited about everything, but here in Rapids, we want to work a little bit more with you guys over at CWAC and having you on the air with us more and having more of a connection. So I want to kind of start there, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
First up, how are things going over at CWAC?
Things are amazing. So first and foremost, CWAC as a whole, this will be the first musical that we've put on since 2019, just prior to the pandemic. Yeah. We've done a couple of shows since then, mostly, Shakespeare?
We've done Midsummer Night's Dream last year, and we did Tempest this year.
Yeah. And
outdoor theater, and virtual stuff.
Yep, there's a couple of virtual things that we've done, but this is the first time that we've been back on stage since, so it's a great opportunity for us to bring live theater back again to the Century Theater.
You know, for a long time, they've been, you know, taking care of crowds up there, and the area has been really supportive of the arts. It's great to have it back. What was it like in that downtime, though, of not having shows and not being able to do these kind of things for all of you? And I'll start with you, Amber.
I lost who I was as a person.
You and me both. I'll give you my therapist number.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
It's got to feel good to be back, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just having the energy, right? So there's so much emotion and energy and life that you create, and you get to build something basically from scratch. I mean, you're given lines, but you get this whole entire playground. And when you don't have that opportunity, I don't know. I just run around the basement a lot screaming. Oh,
she's selling herself short, right? So, like, creatives like Amber, like, that creativity always comes out in some fashion, and she's such a self-starter. Like, she basically, like, taught herself how to knit, like, during that time. And she just, like, churning out hats and scarves like you wouldn't believe. And, like, even in just in the last, like, week, she's taught herself how to crochet, too, and, like, been doing a bunch of that stuff.
So, Patrick will be wearing an outfit. Hopefully, right? It's not that kind of show.
Yeah.
I learned how to crochet and basically made half of that outfit.
Yeah, I can tell you're dying to get back on stage, but it's cool you made good use of the time.
Yeah.
And it is a great note there, Nick, about how creative people are. It's not as if it's a switch for us. It just is always on. There's no turning it off. Ask Robin Williams about that. You know, it's an interesting story with him because for him, it was part of his personality, but he kind of like took a step back when he was around his kids and family, where that was his downtime. We've had enough of a downtime. We're happy to be back, happy to get on stage. Nick, how has it been for you waiting to get back out there?
I was actually lucky enough to be able to do a show in Wausau.
I thought so.
So that was nice. And I did a show in Rapids last year.
Yes.
So I've been on the lucky side. I haven't had as long as a off period as you did.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to feel good to get back with this company.
Oh, I love it. So, I mean, CWACD is one of the first ones that I've worked with out of college and really found a home and a community with that. And it's been years since I've been on that stage, and it's a beautiful stage. So it's a homecoming for me.
Yeah. I'm jealous, and I'll warn you guys, and as well as the community out there, I will be on that stage at some point, even if I've got to like
been waiting
the third tree on the left or something. Yeah. I don't care. It's a beautiful stage, and there's something about it as an actor. When you see something like that, I've talked to my dad about this as an athlete. That there were times where he would look at a rink or a boxing ring and like, I got to be in there. I don't care who I fight. I don't care who I play. I just got to feel it. I got to be out on that ice. I feel the same way about stages. And this one at CWAC is so great. The acoustics, everything about it. Every show I've ever seen there, I've not only heard, but I've really enjoyed.
Not to make you jealous, James, I have been on that stage.
Oh,
the first year we lived here in 2019, I was in the radio version of yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus.
Yes.
So I was able to do that. So I'm not rubbing it in your face or anything.
No, definitely not.
At all.
Oh, you know, no, that's, definitely.
That's not at all.
No, no.
So I'm going to be doing the show by myself from now on. That's awesome. I didn't know that. That's really cool. Oh, that is really cool, man. Oh, we got to talk about that. Theo, how good is it for you to be back out there and to be able to do this? And what is your background with acting? I don't know you as well, so it's good to meet you, man.
I'm super excited to be back. It's my first show since high school. I'm a senior in college. So, yeah, I've been thankful for the whole process. I've been loving it all, whether it was just learning the music or blocking choreography. I'm just happy to be here. That's been really fun. I started acting in middle school. Like, seventh grade was my first show that I got into, and then ever since then I've been getting involved with community theater too, and so this is my first show with CWAC. But yes, that's a little bit about me and what I've been doing.
That's awesome, man. Welcome back to the stage. We're happy to have you.
Yeah.
And I have to say that you're a shining example of what the community theater is all about. Is people coming to here like for as many crazy person as crazy people as there are, like the four of us here and everything. There are people that like yourself that need to get back in and jump back into this kind of thing and stuff. I was trying to keep Theo out of that four. I didn't want to include him in the madness. He'll be there eventually,
but
I want to ease him into it.
Thank you. Baby steps.
It's what we talk about with community theater. When we talk about theater, we obsess about acting. We talk about these characters and the enjoyment we get from it and everything. Mm-hmm. But it's about bringing people like yourself back or bringing new people in and incorporating them in all this mix and really shed, you know, like I said, spreading the madness. Insanity loves company. It really does. It's a fun thing to be a part of. It's great to hear that you're enjoying yourself. I want to get into that right away, and I'll start with you, Theo. How have the rehearsal process been? How's that been going? How often do you guys get to rehearse?
We have rehearsals 6:30 to 9:30 weekdays, and so that's been really fun. It's been a lot of work, a lot of hard work, but just like a lot of fun people. Like, I did community theater in Winona, where I'm from, and I was just expecting it to be this big giant family that I get to be involved with, and everybody's so supportive, so, and great direction. Amy's a great director, has a great vision for the show too. It's been only fun.
Like, really good to hear.
Only fun.
Really good to hear. Nick, how have rehearsals gone for you?
Fantastic. We're working on a reduced schedule. I think usually we have like two more weeks that we like to schedule these out.
Yeah.
But I think, the theater opened and we were like, book it. Let's do it. We're going to cut 2 weeks. And I mean, we're just really fortunate that we've got like such a fantastically talented and motivated cast, such as Theo, to just come in, put in the work. Like, we're working on two less weeks of rehearsal, but you won't be able to tell.
Right, absolutely.
It's gonna be starshine.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to hear. Amber, how's it going for you?
Basically to copy what Nick said, just the fact that we are operating on a more condensed schedule, but that still didn't mean that people are bringing it any less. Like, it just meant that the amount of work and attention and love and bonding that we've had to do has just been that much greater. And and it's just been so amazing to see rehearsals themselves. I cannot keep a straight face when these two interact. It's so hard because I have to deliver more serious lines and these two are goofing off in the background. And I get so jealous. So I feel like I have to join in, but there's just so many great talented actors in this show, and it's fascinating to see that everybody came out, and we have a lot of new talent too. So
like, literally everyone's perfect for their show. Like, it's so cool. Like, as when we were doing callbacks too, it was like, oh, wow, any number of these people are gonna crush it. And so, like, your brain, when Plankton talks, my brain does this weird thing. It's just like, you're him. Like, how did you do that? This is Plankton from the TV show.
Mr. Lawrence is here.
Which is crazy because the actor, Mick, is like 6 foot something. So here he is trying to play this like 3-inch character. But he still has the voice of a 6 foot tall man.
That's perfect. You guys set me up perfectly, because I want to get into your characters now. Before we do that, though, the director, want to mention her again?
Amy Schwab.
Amy Schwab. And a big shout out to her, and because all this starts there.
Absolutely.
Directors with their casting choices and bringing people in and bringing this, you know, making a new family. And so that's really cool to hear. And a big shout out to her and the whole cast, really. We wish you guys could be here with us. Wish the whole cast a wonderful run. Let's get into the characters a little bit. And because this stuff means a lot to me, and especially these interviews and getting a chance to promote the show, I did some homework on SpongeBob, and by that I mean I had kids.
Yes, right. I was going to ask. Are you familiar? Did you watch it?
So my little brother was into it, and then both my little Bambinos were into it too, Bambino and Bambinette. They love SpongeBob. So I got some memory of SpongeBob, and I think a lot of people by now, pop culturally, have an idea of the characters and everything. Does the characters and the live musical, are there similarities? Are there huge differences? Are there things to look forward to? Because I don't know. I mean, how are they going to do this, Seth, with everybody underwater?
I can't get
past that part. I'm blown away by that.
Yeah. First ever aquatic show.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, I don't want to spoil this, but Theo is not actually a sponge.
So. My voice may be, just for the listeners.
It's certainly different. So what are the differences and what are the things that you know, the audience has to look forward to with this show? Anybody that wants to jump in on this?
Yeah, one. So this one, the book and the music and everything has done just such a fantastic job. So my personal background with SpongeBob the cartoon is like I was familiar, wasn't my favorite thing in the world. But I did love musicals, right? So coming to the show, I was like, it's this cartoon. How are they? They can't possibly like translate this thing. Yeah. But they really did a really good job with the book to like distill like what are these characters? What do they represent? And what about them brings joy into the world? It's not just like here's a you know a drawing of a yellow square and let's copy paste that into the musical. Yeah. Clap your hands together, we're all done. Mm-hmm. It's like, what about these characters? Let's just distill them down. What about them brought joy into so many lives, right? This show has been, it's been running for 12, 13 years more.
Oh,
right?
Well, no, we're older than that. Sorry to break it to you.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, no, I think it's been running for 20-something years because it started in 1999. Mm-hmm. So, but they're on season 12 or season 13 right
time
now.
Time is a flat circle.
Yeah, time's, what is time?
No, really well worded, Nick. I really appreciate that. I think that it's something that we don't think about necessarily, but we experience joy. And you know, just a happiness with these characters. Really, it's the definition of nostalgia. Is that is the joy that it brings us, the memory, and the, you know, whether we're romanticizing something or not, who cares? We enjoy it. We're happy to go down that trip down memory lane. Mm-hmm. There are so many people that are going to be able to do this, and I you know, being because I'm older than all of you, I sometimes forget these things. But all it takes is to see like a snippet of Fraggle Rock. And right. Immediately, yes. I'm brought back to 7 years old and just loving that show with all that I am and things like that. So as adults, getting a chance to play these characters, whether you grew up on the show or not, it has to bring a certain joy to the performance, I imagine. And I've never gotten to do anything like that, so I hadn't even thought of that. That's a really good note, Nick.
And it takes that, and that's all there. So it's like all throughout every rehearsal, people are constantly like, ha, 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 like all these quotes and nostalgia from the original show. But for someone like myself, and I'm not super familiar with the original show, it takes that and it brings something more to the stage, right? Because it's not just enough to take a whole bunch of SpongeBob quotes, toss them out there. I mean, it could be enough, right? Yeah, like you would get that nostalgia hit.
Sure.
You have to get that. But it takes that and again, just compacts it, adds some beautiful music and just takes it to new heights.
Yeah.
So it isn't just snippets, it's a story. Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely a full story. Do you want us to get into the background?
I was
going to
say,
story?
If you want to get a little bit into it, sure, that'd be great. Sure. I know we don't want to spoil anything, but certainly if you want to share a little bit of the storyline, that'd be great.
Yeah, so it's Bikini Bottom, your big opening number, getting to introduce all your favorite characters, and it's kind of... I didn't grow up watching the show. Which
how
maybe,
dare you?
I know. Sure. Like, how ironic. But
it is kind of ironic. It is kind of.
I'm pretty sure that this story isn't in any of the TV shows, and it's just kind of a new way to view these characters as they're volcanoes. Gonna destroy Bikini Bottom.
Ooh, Sandy Patrick. Okay, all right, drama.
Sandy Patrick and SpongeBob have to save the day. Mm-hmm. And so you're calling
well, who
them
else? You know,
exactly.
Plankton ain't gonna do it.
Mrs. Puff might.
True. Mrs. Puff might. Or she might, you know, just run off. She might just take off. I mean, that poor woman. That's interesting. All right, cool. Very cool. So let's see here. You want to take a break a little early here, Seth? He's the producer. I got to make sure that everything's okay with him. We'll do that. We'll take a quick time out here. We'll come back and we'll find out more about the characters, get into the details of the show, when you can see this show, when you can enjoy it, and so much more here on WFHR's Director's Cut. Welcome back, everybody, to WFHR's Director's Cut. Seth and James here with you, and we're interviewing the cast of the SpongeBob musical, the newest production being put on by CWAC, and we're so happy to be talking about it and talk with all of you guys. Thank you so much for being here. I want to get into your characters a little bit more and kind of go through this. Well, before we do that, is there anybody else that we want to give a shout out to as far as the cast? I know it's a big cast. It take us a while to name everybody, and then there's always, you know, you worry about forgetting somebody or something like that. But is there anybody you want to make sure to mention here? Or?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we want to give a big thank you to Rocky Rococo's for being our biggest sponsor in the show. Mm-hmm. So they are presenting this show with us. So definitely a big shout out to Rocky Rococo's in Stevens Point.
Not only great pizza, but also supporters of the arts. Gotta love them. Gotta love them. That's great. Thank you, Amber.
Yeah.
So, Theo, let's start with you and SpongeBob. You mentioned already that you had not been familiar with the show. How has it been going getting to know SpongeBob? SpongeBob being SpongeBob? Are you finding yourself a lot drier? Is there anything that you found it with the character? How are you enjoying it?
Yeah. I would say one of the big things. Well, first off, when I got cast, I was thinking about kind of just the iconicness of SpongeBob, mm-hmm. and it's a big role, big shoes to fill, and a lot of people are going to be expecting him to act a certain way, and so one of the big things that I had to work on a lot was SpongeBob's laugh, and like trying to get that down, but I think it's really cool for me to see SpongeBob and how he is always looking on the bright side of things, always trying to bring joy, glass half full kind of personality, lots of high energy. I would say it's fun to play because I'm a very high energy person, and so I kind of just get to take that to the next level all over with my arms and body, mm-hmm. and like get to do fun things with my voice, get to
talk way up here and really excited.
But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And like just not to spoil the end of the show, but like just the emphasis on community and like coming together. And I think like having this being the first show after COVID of like, yes, we can see each other. We can hug each other again. Like it's so important to have community. And like that's just kind of the main drive of this is like, we're going to get through whatever we're going through together because we have each other.
It's beautiful. Very well said, too. And that's exciting. I know as a parent, when you're letting your kids watch these things, you worry immediately if you've never seen it before, is this going to be kosher? Is this going to be all right for them? Mm-hmm. And immediately, the first watching SpongeBob, the character SpongeBob, made me automatically feel cool about my kids watching it. His positivity, his kind of almost relentless positivity was something like, all right, I want my kids to be around that because they need a little of that. Their dad ain't that well. The dad could use a little of that himself. So it was really cool for that. And then to see the show grow and all the characters that evolved over the years and everything, you see that community aspect. You see a lot of that. And while it may not have been played out this way, it kind of worked out just as we planned it because you have a show here that is perfect for the times.
Absolutely.
It really is. And it's especially, as you mentioned, Theo, getting out of the... I mean, I understand that the pandemic, quote-unquote, has been done for a little bit here, although we all understand that it's not really done.
Yeah.
But at least things have opened up more.
Yep.
But even with that, I know so many people that are still hesitant to go out or still nervous about certain things. So bringing this idea of community on stage, it just kind of embodies it into the community and kind of shows a little bit more of it. It really is a perfect show for right now, and I can't imagine how much fun it's going to be on stage, let alone for the audience. One of my favorite characters in children's TV history is Patrick. I love Patrick.
Who doesn't love Patrick?
I'm a sucker for starfish already. I actually had a couple in my tank with my kids and stuff when we were little. And we got this chocolate chip starfish, I want to say like a year or two before like the show actually kicked in. Mm-hmm. And my son and daughter flip out when they see Patrick because, we got a Patrick. We have a starfish and all this. And so he was one of the house's favorite characters.
Yeah.
So no expectations for you, Nick. I say it because I know what you're capable of.
Oh, yeah.
And I also understand, too, that just from talking to you just in this little bit here, you're enjoying yourself. How is it going playing Patrick?
Oh, Patrick's an absolute joy. And, for me, trying to look at, again, not super, having watched the cartoons past this, I also did some crash courses of myself and what is Patrick, right? Because I'm not going to be out there in a mascot costume where people can just go like, oh, that's Patrick, I recognize that face. Right. It's me in a costume, and it's my face. So for me, what is Patrick, right? Patrick for me was just experiencing life without a filter. Mm-hmm. There's no filter in and there's no filter out. Patrick doesn't care what what you think he should feel about SpongeBob the Musical. Like Patrick goes to SpongeBob the Musical, he experiences it with full sincerity, and he'll let you know what he thinks about it with full sincerity. And like, that was a little bit of inspiration for me, because I definitely try to like fit into the box of what like society thinks I should, right? 30-year-old giant man should be dancing around in SpongeBob the Musical, but now I'm just having a blast.
Yeah.
That's perfect, man. And that's really cool to hear, too, because I, again, hadn't thought of that. You know, you walk out there, you're in costume. How are they going to know it's Patrick for sure? How are they going to really believe that it's SpongeBob for sure? You know, you embody these characters. You really bring them out. The voices certainly do that, but like Thea was saying, mannerisms and all these things, there's so much that does it. I have no doubt that it's, you know, moments into the show, you immediately forget that you are watching a play. You are just in court. You are just in Bikini Bottom. You are just enjoying this, and thankful that you're not drowning.
Yes.
That part again, I should mention, no water in this play. Amber, how about your character?
Yeah. So, what do you want to know? Sandy is.
Yeah,
Sandy
who is Sandy?
And, yeah. Who let's is talk Sandy? About so her. Sandy is a squirrel from Texas. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of a transplant to Bikini Bottom, but that doesn't stop her from absolutely just falling in love with the community and wanting to just be a part of anything that helps bring people together. Like, she is a very spunky and also sincere mammal, I guess, to a fault,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know? Right, yeah. Her biggest thing is these two, right? SpongeBob and Patrick, and just hanging out with them. And sometimes she has to give them a dose of reality, and there's no harm in that. But yeah, she's just absolutely adorable.
I always thought of Sandy as the adult in the group. You
know,
we all had that friend. We all had
right.
that friend. I was that friend.
Yeah.
I was that friend. I was no fun. I one of the things that I liked about her too was just the creativeness of that character. You're going to put a squirrel underwater. Like,
right.
I mean, and how you figured that out, the logistics, all that, they pull it off where it's actually believable. It's like, oh yeah, I could see that. How has the accent gone?
So I don't want to do...
This show doesn't play in Texas, right?
Right.
Okay. Oh, okay, good.
You're good. You're
yeah.
spot on. You will never hear a better Texas accent.
I was afraid to go, like, full Texas, because then you can't understand.
Right.
So I'm more like Oklahoma, I feel.
Oh, yeah, like
so
yeah,
don't yeah. tell anybody else.
No,
oh,
no.
That's what radio is. Okay, my bad.
That's a smart idea, though. We run into this with a lot of shows with English accents or Cockney accents and
yeah.
that kind of thing. How heavy do you go? How,
right.
you know, you want to be... It doesn't matter how authentic you are if they can't understand us. So
right. I'm not going Boomhauer.
Nice. Yes, yes. thank you, guys. Thank you for all that. So let's go ahead and the last couple minutes we got here, let's go over the details. Let's let people know where they can take in the show, the dates of the show, all that, Amber.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we've said before, Century Theater is going to be hosting this for us. And the dates are October 28th, the 29th, the 30th. And then again, we have another showing on November 4th and 5th, and you can buy tickets at the door, or otherwise you can go to our website, cwact.org, and there should be information there on how you can buy tickets.
It's a great opportunity to support local, to support the arts, for artists to support artists, something that we're all about here, and I know this community is all about. Now, I say community, I mean Central Wisconsin. Portage County, all of our surrounding areas here. We're very fortunate that we have a supportive community when it comes to this stuff, and we show that by showing up to these shows. Give these guys an amazing crowd. Give them all they can handle out on that stage. If the people want to get tickets, you mentioned the places they can get them. We encourage you to do that right away. Get them. Don't wait. Don't wait. You don't want to wait too long. You want to get these tickets as soon as possible. Is there anything that we want to touch on before we let you guys go that we haven't covered yet?
Yeah, one thing I want to push is that, you know, you hear SpongeBob, and that brings strong emotions to a lot of people in multiple directions, right? For me, it's a happy thing. Some people don't, you know, have kids and weren't a fan of listening to SpongeBob, sure. right? Yeah. And I just want to put out there that, you know, even if you don't like SpongeBob, consider coming to see the show, because I really feel like it does a good job of, again, capturing what brings happiness, what brings joy, what brings smiles out of SpongeBob, with, again, not just being hitting play on an episode of SpongeBob.
Absolutely. And like, to even go one step further, the people who wrote songs, so like Steven Tyler, the Magnetic Zeros, Flaming Lips, John Legend, Panic at the Disco, they all wrote songs for this musical. So these are big names that wrote music, which is a big, complex thing for us to learn different variations, genres of music. But if that doesn't bring you in, just the amazing set, the colors, the vibrancy that we have created for you. Like you said, you walk into the theater and you feel like you are in Bikini Bottom.
Yeah, and all that music, like, even though it's written by artists from different genres across the whole spectrum, they did a fantastic job of keeping it all one universe.
Yes.
So it's not like you're like hitting random on your iPod and like all of a sudden you're like, okay, here's a new genre. You feel like you're bouncing off the walls. Right. It all flows so tight and it all just feels like Bikini Bottom.
That's so cool, you guys.
Yeah.
Amber, one more time, the website people can go to find out more information.
Sure. That would be cwact.org.
That's so cool. And all those musicians, all that stuff is really something, you guys.
Well, I have one final question to wrap up the show here. This is for Nick. No, this is for Nick. Nick, what I want to know, very important, for the cast party, are you going to be making chicken bacon cheddar soup? I have to say that I had it for the cast party for The Real Inspector Hound. It was amazing. It was hotter than heck. And Steve Martin and I were like taking turns, like stopping and trying to, oh my God, it's so hot.
There was much sweat dripping from their foreheads.
It was amazing. So this is the question, Nick. Are you going to be making it for the cast party?
Oh man, well, I feel like I've been called out, so maybe I have
to. It's only the cast that's going to be there. It doesn't really matter. I just want to tell you that it's really good. That's all. I want everyone to know.
I love... A little behind the curtain here. I tell Seth beforehand, hey, you got questions, go ahead and jump in anytime. And the one time you jump in, like, the that's hilarious, brother. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. This is not, you did too good of a job. You're going to have to come back.
Oh,
we're
going
to have to bring you guys back the next show and the show after that and so on and so on. Want to keep this partnership going. And
absolutely.
Break a leg. Have a great
Thank
run.
You.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having
hopefully
us.
Hopefully, you'll be joining us on the next one.
Yeah. Hopefully.
We'll interview you then.
Yes, right. Welcome back to the Director's Cut, everybody. I am Seth. I'm joined by James, of course.
Hey, hey.
And one of the other things we want to do with the show is we want to talk, of course, movies. And we'll get to a little bit later in the show, we'll get to you giving us some movies to go through, because we'd love to get your suggestions on movies that maybe we've never heard before or anything like that to take a look at. We'd love to do that. But right now, Halloween is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which means that horror movies are
this
on everybody's mind.
This is Halloween.
Jack Skellington has made an appearance. He always does here at this time of year. So I'm going to go to James first, and is there any Halloween movie, or not even a Halloween movie, just like maybe a tense movie, like a little scary movie, a movie that you find that kind of gives you the chills?
I grew up on the Hitchcock style of horror telling and suspense and everything, so those have always been my favorite type of movies, and I'm so glad you asked this, Seth, because I could easily take this opportunity to ramble about A Nightmare Before Christmas, which I love and stuff, and I encourage people to watch.
Good Halloween movie.
But if you're looking for a newer film and a one that fits the season and everything, I cannot recommend enough, and I never do recommend, but I cannot recommend enough the movie Nope. The new Jordan Peele movie.
Oh, yes. I've not seen it. I've heard of it.
It is suspense and touch of horror, but not really. It's not your blood and gore horror. It's more, oh, what's going on behind the door? What's going on up there? That kind of thing. The actors do an incredible job of showing this on their face, of giving you so much of this, to where you don't even need the special effects, you know? It is an incredible cast. Jordan Peele is the new king of suspense. He has taken the mantle and run with it. He is one of those sought after people in the game right now.
Right now.
And he's really good at this. He's shown it multiple times with us and with Get Out, with his work with the Twilight Zone TV show.
Yep, yep.
His production company, like Monkey Paw, bringing that back because he loves that type of storytelling so much.
His production company is called Monkey Paw. Which is a classic horror story. I mean, come on.
So good.
He knows
so
what
good.
He's doing.
He I always thought he was just incredible at comedy. Key and Peele was awesome. I dare say he found his real niche.
Yeah, that's
saying something because he's very good at comedy.
He's very good at all. Yes, indeed.
I was a little disappointed when Get Out came out and like, oh, he's getting behind the camera. I was looking forward to seeing him act more and everything. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. No, I would love to see him act still, sure.
Right.
But man, do I love his directing. Mm-hmm. And I have a hard time believing if you're looking for suspense, if you're looking for horror, and you're looking for something new, then Nope wouldn't hit it on every cylinder.
That's great.
A great cast, great show. It's really the I didn't think about it beforehand, but as soon as you brought up the question, I'm like, oh, here's a good one.
That's a good one. Yes.
How about you?
Exactly. So for me, actually, I have two. See, I'm already breaking the rules. I have two because I've got a classic one, and then I've got one that's not really a horror film, but it's very much a suspenseful film. Mm. The first one I was going to go is the classic 1963, The Haunting.
Oh,
directed by Robert Wise. Yes. It's considered one of the scariest movies or creepiest movie. I don't know how you could say it, but it's a scary movie that doesn't show you anything.
Nope.
It's all suspense. Mm-hmm. It's all tension. And it is like your piano wire tension we're talking about on this thing.
I started to tighten up my hand as soon as you said it, Seth. I've seen that movie since I was a kid.
Yes.
And yeah, that's one of those ones.
It is. If you have not had the chance to see it, and I would recommend, don't do the remakes.
No.
They're not as good as the original. It's in black and white. Mm-hmm. And it's got some of the most atmosphere you are ever going to find. I saw an interview with Robert Wise, and he said that people, before he passed, that, of course, he had an interview before he passed. He can't do it afterwards. Jeez. Anyway. he said that people, that was the thing. You know, here's a man who directed, he directed West Side Story.
Right,
he directed some big films. He said people would come up to him and say not only that The Haunting was their favorite film that he'd ever done, it was also the scariest thing they had ever seen.
Wow.
And considering what has come since, you know, all the gory horror and all this stuff, it's a remarkable achievement, I have to say that.
I almost, especially if you haven't in a long time or you've never watched classic, like older movies and everything, and all you've seen is the modern storytelling of horror and suspense and everything, I really recommend to that person to watch those. I think you will be blown away by how intense you find it.
Yes, it's amazing.
I really think too, as 80s kids and stuff, growing up in the time where, hey, we can do splatters, we can do this and everything.
Friday the 13th,
Nightmare
and
all
on
that
Elm Street,
stuff.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
We got a little numb to that kind of thing.
We did.
And it brought me back to the style of storytelling with the Jordan Peele stuff and with more of that, because it seems like that's... For like nowadays, there's a billion types of movies, and everybody can put these movies out there now.
Yep.
The majority of the more budgeted stuff is going more suspense.
Yep.
And it's almost like the people with not as much budget are going more gore and special effects.
Right.
Which is interesting. Like that.
Yeah.
It is interesting.
Yeah.
And I kind of like how that's worked.
Yeah.
I think you'll get a real kick out of some of these movies.
Yes.
It's a real good idea. All great suggestions.
Yep. The next one I want to put out there, and this one is more for people who have children, because it deals with, I think, a fear most parents have about losing your child and or not knowing where your child is. It's I can't remember the exact year off the top of my head. It's in the late 60s. Bunny Lake is Missing, which was directed by Otto Preminger, who is one of the most underrated directors of all time. He directed some amazing films.
Man, that's
and
a deep
we
cut.
Could do it. We could do a whole director's cut episode of just Otto Preminger movies because he was amazing. But I digress. but the movie is the premise is a woman and her daughter, you know, they're in a like a isolated area, and I think it's in England, if I remember correctly. I haven't seen it in a while, but she leaves her daughter alone for a minute. Mm. She comes back, her daughter's gone, and her name is Bunny Lake. And the rest of the film is her frantically trying to find what happened to her daughter.
Yeah.
As a parent, it's terrifying because it's like, oh my gosh, you know, you could totally see this happening to you.
Yeah.
And it's very paranoid as well because it's like something happened, no one's talking about it.
Yeah.
And there's something behind all of this. It has some really great performances. The most like out of left field casting I've ever seen in my life. Noel Coward is cast as one of this really creepy guy that's in the movie.
Him.
And, you know, this is Noel Coward. Yeah. No, you know, the light, the airy, you know, guy who wrote musicals for a living and songs. Hmm. And he plays a very dark character, which is really brilliant. I mean, brilliant casting in that.
Check that out.
But it's,
I haven't
it's,
seen it in a long time.
Yeah, it is. It's a brilliant movie. It's a great especially, idea. It's one of those, not a lot of people have seen it. But it's for atmosphere, for things like that. Check it out. It's really suspenseful.
Just real quickly, an honorable mention. My mom, who loves horror, loves Stephen King, biggest Stephen King fan I've ever known and ever will know. Book-wise, no Stephen King story ever scared her, ever kept her laid up at night, except for Pet Sematary. Pet Sematary freaked her out. And I think in part because of what you're touching on there about the child aspect of it and everything. It was after I was born. And she literally like was up for a couple of nights from that book. Wow. And no other book has ever done that to her, no other like story or anything like that. So if you're looking for a good book, maybe that's one.
That's a good Halloween book. Yeah, well, you know, you could say that about a lot of Stephen King books. Yeah. Of course. Right. Just find out whatever you're scared of. And he's written a book about it.
Right.
Because so, he's that prolific as well. So yeah, those are some recommendations for some fun, spooky Halloween movies. Not necessarily themed in Halloween, but they will make your hair stand on end. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back here on The Director's Cut.
Welcome back, everybody, to WFHR's Director's Cut. James and Seth here with you. Seth, as we are putting this show together, some incredibly breaking, shocking news happened.
Yeah, wow.
James Gunn and Peter Safran are going to run DC Films. They will now be called DC Films will now be called DC Studios, and they will act as co-CEOs and co-chairs. The two have signed a four-year deal for this unprecedented opportunity. Gunn, whose new job starts November 1st, will be promoting Guardians Guardians even as he's top-ranked DC executive. Wild.
That's weird.
It's a weird world we're in now.
Very weird.
We truly live in a strange corner of the multiverse. We really do. The search for a quote Kevin Feige type of morphed into a look for a Pixar model, which sees filmmakers and producers acting as executives. Warner is trying to apply that to live action. This is a very different thing that nobody does these kind of things except in the Pixar, in the animated world, really.
Right, exactly.
Where you let directors have executive controls and these kind of things. It's a risky thing to do, but for one, does DC really have do they got anything to lose? And also, I always think of this with certain things in life. Is the ceiling too tempting to give up? And the basement not that bad. The ceiling and floor is something like this. Like at the worst case scenario, you got James Gunn under contract. He's a great director. He's a great creative person.
Yep.
You almost feel like you can't mess up there. The best things DC have done film wise outside of Aquaman, Wonder Woman, is the Suicide Squad franchise, which he's the big head of. He's the director of and all that. So is it a little of that, or is this almost desperate?
I don't see it as desperate. I see it as it's kind of a let's see what happens kind of thing. They really don't have a ton to lose. I think there's a very, very high ceiling.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this not as a DC guy at all.
Right.
I have tried occasionally to get into the comics. And, of course, I know who the characters are. Everyone knows who the characters are. Yeah. They're all through pop culture. But I never was able to get into the comics for whatever reason. And I don't know if it was because I was, just totally Marvel when growing up. Yeah, that's all I read. And I just couldn't make the transition to that. But they've got these great characters and they've not really done a lot of great stuff with it. They keep changing tone. It's like, well, maybe this will work. But they switch really quickly.
Yeah.
They don't give it a chance to organically, which is what happened with Marvel.
Yep.
It was an organic process.
Yeah.
They didn't have a big game. I mean, they had an outline of what they wanted to do, but they didn't have we're going to do this and this and this and this. It's become that because they have to because of how big the universe has gotten.
Right. The thing with Marvel got right, and we've touched on this before, is patience.
Yes.
It's hey, this is going to take some time to build an audience, to build people.
Yeah,
we're willing to do that. We'll take our time with this. We'll let these characters get fleshed out. We're going to make you – because what it does is immediately – pulls the people into the storyline.
Right.
everybody knows the origin story of Batman. We all got that down. So DC, I can understand where DC is coming from, where mm-hmm. when Batman's introduced, Bat-Affleck's Batman and all that, mm-hmm. hey, we're not even going to worry about that. There were some fans that thought that was kind of cool. But what it did was, all of a sudden, I don't feel as empathetic towards Bruce Wayne. I don't care as much about Bruce Wayne. Mm-hmm. I don't know that storyline. Even if I know the storyline, I don't see it, so I don't. My heart doesn't get attached to these characters. It's an issue with a lot of creative work right now, not just the superhero world and all that. It's letting characters flesh out. It's mm-hmm. having the patience, not just from creative types, but from audiences yep. to let that happen. It's going to make the experience that much more beneficial and certainly get people more engaged and caring more if they actually care about the characters. I saw Black Adam recently, and mm-hmm. this is DC's, like, this was the big one for them. Like, this needs to hit. It yes. needs to be a gigantic hit. And in its opening weekend, it did great.
It was big, yeah.
It's one of their bigger releases. But it's all about that week, too. It's mm-hmm. all about, like, are people going to want to see it again that went and saw it? Is mm-hmm. word of mouth going to be such that,
exactly,
hey, me and my other superhero friends and everything, I'm telling them they got to see Black Adam and all this stuff. Now, I don't want to ruin anything for anybody. So spoiler alert, a big time spoiler alert here. Earmuffs if you don't want to know any of this.
Yep.
They've got it felt more like a Justice Society movie than a Black Adam movie.
Mm.
And while I enjoyed it and I thought great, great casting, mm-hmm. right, no problem with any of the casting, there is Hawkman in it. And I've never heard of this character before, and I don't know much about him.
I don't even know DC, and I know who Hawkman is. Come on,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, come on. I'm losing my cred here. But I was really looking forward to it. The actor playing him was killing it, was doing great. Mm-hmm. And I kept waiting in the movie, okay, what's his origin story? What do I want to – and it never came up. And never, mm-hmm. They just basically show you this character, and they give you kind of this – almost like a generic version of this character, sort of.
Right.
Pierce Brosnan, one of the better actors any of us have ever seen,
right, yeah.
is playing one of the more cooler superhero characters than any of us have ever seen, Dr. Fate. And they don't even really flesh his character out much.
Oh, which is, for again, DC, that's a great character. It's a Doctor Strange-y type. Not exactly the same.
No.
But if you're familiar with Doctor Strange, it's that kind of mystical kind of thing. And he is a great character. Wonderful bit of casting. I mean, just very cool.
I want to, as long as you gave me the opening.
Sure, do it.
I am watching an interview with Pierce Brosnan, who I really like, mm-hmm. and he's talking about how, well, why did you take this role? You don't have to. Your career is established. You got plenty of money and everything. And he didn't take it he didn't get a big paycheck from this. He actually mm-hmm. did it because he wanted to try something different, and he was inspired by Benedict Cumberbatch, who in his Doctor Strange performance, and he saw that, and he was blown away, and he's like, okay, I'll do it. He didn't want to do it at first. He got offered the role. He watches Doctor Strange and immediately was like, oh, I want to do this.
Nice.
Benedict Cumberbatch hears this, and I've never seen an actor turn red faster than him hearing this, because he looks up to Pierce Brosnan. And it's kind of cool to hear that.
That's really
and you
cool.
don't hear other actors give credit yeah. to other actors like that very often.
You don't. You don't. It's fun. I'm glad to hear that.
And I'm glad you mentioned Doctor Strange, because that is on paper, that is a difficult concept to get across. That's tough.
Especially in a movie.
In comics it was difficult, let alone in the movies.
Yeah, exactly.
But they pulled it off because they took their time. They introduce him in one movie, he shows up in other movies, and slowly, more and more, all of a sudden it becomes easy. Like, okay, I understand.
Yeah, we
all
know
this
guy, right?
No big deal. The multiverse concept, to people that are not watching the movies and not been keeping up with them, seems far-fetched, seems way out there, seems yep. bonkers. To those of us that have been watching these movies, it adds up. It fits.
They've done a really great job of kind of containing it in ways that you can get bits and pieces, slices here and there. I saw the – I'm sorry, we are way off topic right now, but that's part of what the show is all about.
Yes.
If you didn't know, everybody, this is what we're going to probably be doing. I saw the trailer for Quantumania, Ant-Man and the Wasp,
yes.
and that is going to be bonkers.
Yes.
It's one of those things that's going to be like crazy concepts. How are we going to get through this kind of thing? But man, they've got such a great track record with it. So I guess this is kind of like, what is DC up against? Well, this is what they're up against now.
And I mean, this is the other thing that's frustrating about DC. The blueprint's right there. Marvel just gave it to you. They just showed you their hand, how to play the hand. You take your time with these things.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Audiences will come. You're always going to have it's almost as if they forgot the whole core of this. Mm-hmm. Every superhero movie is going to do pretty decent in the box office because you're coming into it with a core fan base. You've already got one of the things you beg for as a movie, a producer and director and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, a core fan base. Hey, I do an Iron Man movie. Iron Man's got a big fan base. I'm going to be okay.
Yeah, that's right.
I know at least I got them.
Yep.
But it doesn't happen if you don't give the audience some patience, yep. some bit of... Respect the audience.
Yeah, credit to the audience. Yeah. Exactly.
It's not as if you... Like, Marvel didn't dumb things down. Mm-mm. They simplified things a little bit.
Yeah.
They took away a little bit of the, some of the stuff that maybe wasn't necessary.
Because of the form.
Yes.
Comic books
yes.
are a very different form from movies. So you have to do that. Yeah.
This is truly all DC's got to do. They're doing everything else pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
The casting. I have no issue with any casting in any DC.
Yeah.
I even got won over by Ben Affleck as Batman with the Snyder Cut. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's the Ben Affleck that I know.
Yeah.
That's the one. He played Bruce and Batman very well. They've got good history when they take chances. The Joker movie, the most recently, the newest incarnation of Batman, both did well.
Yeah, right.
And even in their superhero movies with the traditional stuff of Aquaman and Wonder Woman have done well. They've shown that they can do it. Just got to be smart about it. I with James Gunn and this mm-hmm. other gentleman, yep. James is going to be in charge of the creative side. He's going to take care of the numbers.
Right.
On paper, that looks like it could work. Hopefully, they are able to get along, and it does. History, Hollywood has a long history of this not working out.
Well, and they actually have a previous relationship. He was, I believe.
That's different.
James. I'm talking like at least my
friend.
Well,
he's a friend of the show.
My buddy Jim,
you
know.
Yeah.
James Gunn, his manager, his business
yeah.
manager. So,
right.
yeah, they do have a history, which
that.
Is.
Yeah.
So, they have worked together, and that's good. For DC,
yeah.
because they do have a working relationship. One other thing I did want to touch on before we wrap this segment up is I just hope, because I read a couple of articles about this, and I know the fanboys are getting real excited.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
James Gunn, wonderful director. This is a new position for him, though, too,
yeah.
doing this administration stuff. He's got a whole bunch of stuff on his plate now. Don't go overboard with the expectations.
Yeah.
Please
yeah.
give the guy a break.
Have patience.
Okay, please yeah. have patience with James yeah. Gunn. We all love him.
Yeah.
He's great at reaching out to the fandom. I mean, he's great. You know, that's the one thing Kevin Feige doesn't do. He doesn't talk to the people.
Yeah.
James Gunn does.
Yes.
And he's very
yes.
good at it.
So
that's a plus for him.
I follow him on Twitter, and mm-hmm. I see him all the time. Like somebody, just a random person will leave something in comments, and he'll comment on it.
Yes.
And I'd love to know if this was a dream of his, if it came up overnight, if it was something he never even thought of and mm-hmm. just had the opportunity in front of him. Because I think a lot of us, when DC was looking for somebody, immediately thought of Kevin Smith. And I think
yeah.
Kevin Smith would be the perfect person to be in charge. I don't know if Kevin would want to do it.
That's a lot of work, yeah.
This is the next best option to me.
Oh.
The fear, are you going to lose him as a director? That would be my only fear. But I don't think that's going
to
happen.
And that would be more for the rest of us.
Right.
He's such a great
right,
director.
Yes,
we want him to continue to direct. And, you know, it's for 4 years. Maybe after that he's like, okay, I'm done.
Good
I did
point.
My job. Let's go back to my first love, directing
yeah.
kind of thing. Who knows?
As we wrap up the show here, we do want to let the audience know that Director's Cut is going to be an interactive show. We want you guys to interact with us. So encourage you to email Seth or I, Seth or James at WFHR.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we want you guys to send us requests, like for reviews.
Yeah.
Review request roulette kind of thing.
There
where,
you go, yeah.
You know, you say, hey, we want you guys to see this movie and review it. You know, that
yeah,
kind of thing.
Which would be a lot of fun. Yeah, we would love that feedback.
It doesn't have to be new movies either.
It can be old.
Any
it can
movie.
Be new. It can be music.
Yes.
Have you ever heard this album? We'll do that.
We're also going to be looking and open for suggestions about guests on the show. You know,
this is
arts and entertainment, people. We want musicians, actors, writers, plays, photographers, everybody on this show.
We know Central Wisconsin is filthy
yes.
with musicians
yes.
and actors and artists. We want them. We want them all. We want to get as many people on these airwaves as we can.
Get them to us, everybody.
Yep.
And again, a big shout out to the cast of the SpongeBob musical for joining us. Join Central Wisconsin Area Community Theater as this is premiering on the 30th. They've already had a couple shows, but they're going on the 30th, on the 4th of November and the 5th of November at the Century Theater in Stevens Point. Mm-hmm. You can get tickets at 715-341-6744. That's 341-6744. Show times at 7, and then they have a Sunday matinee at 2. Be sure to get those tickets and enjoy and support local. Thank you so much for joining us for the premiere, the original episode, the origin story of a Director's Cut.
We have one now. That's awesome.
It's been a lot of fun, everybody.
All right.
Be listening next week for more Seth Faces the Music and WFHR's Director's Cut.